Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 191, Hobby Bunker Game Day 2017. So I want to welcome all of you new and longtime listeners alike to this very special episode of the show. You might be able to hear some ambient noise because we are recording this live at the Hobby Bunker Game Day here in Malden, Massachusetts, and there's a lot of games going on, so it's kind of like a one-day convention. It's very small, but it's great because you really get to know a lot of people, and it's a chance for people to try out games before they bring them to an actual convention. So for today, I hope you will appreciate the ambience that we're providing here, and I'm sure some of that will come through. And also, I want to say that it's not just me here on the show. We've got my buddy and my co-host, the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing good, thanks.
Are you really doing good? Because you're the one who drove.
I'm really doing good. I despise most things about Boston, Massachusetts, but most of all the traffic. But now that we're here, I'm actually doing fine.
I love the Hobby Bunker. I really do. I wish I could just pick it up and put it closer to us.
I tell you, the Bunker is a great store. It's a great place to come. They're at most of the area conventions in New England I'll attend. And I've spent a lot of money here. And on the one hand, yes, I wish it was closer and more convenient to where I live. But on the other hand, if it was, I would be broke, plain and simple.
You'd be on the street, right?
Maybe not that broke, but I'd have a whole lot less discretionary income, let's put it that way.
So the Hobby Bunker, to give it a plug, is it's a fantastic gaming store. So they do Magic, they do historical minis, they do board games, RPGs, they do it all. It's in Massachusetts, so if you're in the area, you can head on over to 33 Exchange Street, Malden, Mass. And they're open generally Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, and Saturday, 10 to 6 as well. Different hours on Sundays, and they open late on Thursdays, which is pretty nice, until 8 o'clock. Yeah. But if you're not here, because I know a lot of you are global, you're not local listeners, that you can order online. You go to thehobbybunker.com, and we'll have a link in the show notes in case I got the web address wrong. But you can order online, and they'll ship it to you. Shipping is like $5, I think. Sometimes they do coupon codes, so you can get free shipping. Or if you order like $100 worth of stuff, I think you get free shipping. And they get really good historical gaming stuff that you can't usually find elsewhere. I know some people go to like the War Store or Miniature Market and some of those other places. Even they don't have it, but the Bunker gets it.
Yeah, the thing to understand about the Bunker is, I mean, we call it a game store, but it's the Hobby Bunker. It's really a hobby store. So most of the time when somebody says game store nowadays, you're thinking Games Workshop and Magic. And that basically is it. The Hobby Bunker is not that way. They've got a little bit of everything. They've got a wide variety of historical miniatures in all different scales. They have a bunch of 1/32nd scale stuff, 54 millimeter stuff. You name it, they've got it. They've got model kits, board games, huge amount of terrain making supplies.
You do dioramas. They're known for toy soldiers, actually. John Jenkins designed. They have a ton of that. Beautiful pieces. And they do a great job. They are at all sorts of different conventions. And, of course, they co-host this game day. They do it, what, twice a year, is it?
I think it's twice a year. Spring and fall. I'm not 100% sure about that, but yeah.
And it's done in conjunction with the Boston Train Bands, which is a great wargaming group here in Boston. I'm very lucky to have them, actually.
Yeah, actually.
This is, I think, and I might be wrong, but I think it's the 8th annual game day that they've done. And as I said, we're recording it live. It's August 26, 2017. So we came here, and traffic is never a fun thing. But today actually was a weird day for us, right? Because we did an episode before here. We recorded the one you guys will hear after this episode.
Yeah.
We recorded it first. It was with Mr. Sam Mustafa. Mustafa.
I've been pronouncing it wrong forever.
For that reason alone, I was glad he came on, because I was like, so Sam, what's your website? Is it sammustafa.com? And he's like, Sam Mustafa.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my goodness. And that's the one thing I try not to do is mispronounce
somebody's name wrong, but yeah, you know, it happens. Yeah, that was a lot of fun talking with him, so I can't wait for that episode to come out and see what people think.
I like to think that if he was local, he would be at an event like this, and he must like that near him, right?
I'm sure, I would think so, yeah.
Because he's out in, is it Ohio or Pennsylvania or something like that, I think.
I thought it was Midwest. I couldn't swear to it.
It might be further
sure.
west. Yeah. But he loved
Ohio
this kind
is
of thing.
The Midwest.
It is the Midwest.
Okay, well, you said Ohio, and I said the Midwest, and then you said, oh yeah, it might be further west. That's not what Midwest means.
No, but I was thinking like Missouri Midwest or like Kansas Midwest, like that kind of stuff.
All right, fine.
No, but you're right. Ohio is the Midwest. No offense to any Ohioans who live in Flatland. No, I got family in Ohio. Been there. Beautiful country. Very flat in portions.
Yeah, the portions of it I've seen are very, very flat. Other
portions, not so much. So at the game day today, they actually started earlier than we were able to get here because of the Sam Mustafa episode. I get a... Really train myself.
You're gonna have to remember that, yeah.
It's like when we've had Jesper Ortiz on, and in the beginning I was always like, "So Jesper Ortiz,
yeah.
Ortiz." Like,
yep, yep.
And he's like, "No, over here we pronounce the J with a Y, and it's Ortiz." And I appreciate it. You weren't on the episode. Mike Payne was on the episode, but he's like, "You know, you do the best out of any American who's trying to pronounce my name," and so I liked it. So we weren't able to get here first thing in the morning, but they've had a ton of games set up. So they got Deerfield 1704, run by Dave Valentine. And actually, up until a few days before this recording, I thought he was going to be using the On Guard rules, but I think he's trying out a new set of rules that he's using.
Oh.
I don't know which ones they are. But Deerfield, set here in Massachusetts, French and Indian War, so you got a skirmish game going on. There's a fort, and it's a really cool time period. I think he has up to 6 people who can play. It's a perennial favorite with people of all ages. He has a couple kids, and they kind of help to create it for him. He's done a fantastic job on all the terrain. He's very skilled, and people should just pay attention to his work because, you know, when you see his stuff at a convention, it's not easy. That's not right. It's easy to tell it's his. I'm trying to say it's not easy to confuse it with someone else's work.
Right.
You can tell that it's his, and he puts a lot of time and effort into it. And then we also have another event, The Last Train to Vienna, set during World War I, the Great War, right? That's using trench wars. And I'm not familiar with that rule set. Are you, Adrian?
I'm not either. I'm actually not familiar with any of the rule sets for the Great War, World War I period. It's not a period that I've ever, literally ever, gamed. So, yeah, I don't know the rules.
But Jim Carroll and Andy Metheny are GMing that. We looked at the table. The table looks beautiful. The models are fantastic. Everything just looks great. They're using this teddy bear fur, which I
it's
tend
all
to be
the rage nowadays. I like it.
See, I tend to not like it. When I first saw it many moons ago, I was like, "Oh, that's kind of neat because you can do so much. It gives you texture, which is neat." But then, ever since seeing how Cigar Box Battle does it with a short fur, it's just I love that so much more because you get that still aesthetic,
yeah, you get
but
the
you don't
texture, get... but it's not. Yeah, sometimes the teddy bear fur, I guess, is a little bit too long. It depends on the effect you're going for, I suppose. But
yeah,
I definitely like the textured mats rather than just plain green felt. Nothing wrong with plain green felt, but
no, it depends on the game. I mean, we used it for Aurelian, and I think that was okay because kind of gave it old school feel, especially if you're doing print and play or if you're doing like a little war sort of thing. You want to match everything to the feel of it.
Right.
There's some modern being done. Austin Mitchell, he's done a lot of modern stuff at conventions nearby, doing Ghost Recon Wildlands using the Spectre Operations rules.
Yeah, I don't know those rules either. I kind of wanted to give that a try, but
I talked you out of it, actually.
Yeah, you did. We're not going to have time. It's okay. I wanted to play the game that we registered for, too, so it's like we could only do one, so whatever. So
Mike Payne, of course, is doing his Hang High. He's actually at the table next to us. Ton of kids over there playing. They look like they're having a lot of fun.
They do.
It's his travel version, I guess you can call it, of Hang High.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot smaller than you normally would see at a convention. It's only 1 6x4 table instead of 2 or 3.
Yeah, because he normally does like 10 or 20 feet of table.
Yeah.
He could fill up this whole place just with Hang High. And it would be good, but it'd be a lot of Hang High. And then there's a oddly enough, there's another early 20th century China game being done here. Yangtze River Patrol?
Yeah, there is. It looks like a skirmish level game. I didn't actually get to check that out as much as I wanted to yet, but...
No, we'll head over there after the recording for sure. It's it says it's using the Back of Beyond rules, which, again, so many rule sets are they tied to be...
I've heard of those. I've wanted to kind of give them a look because they're, as I understand it, like I said, I've never actually seen them in person, never had them in my hand. But, Back of Beyond, they're basically a set of rules for gaming colonial type stuff.
That's
so
cool.
I would think, obviously, they're using it for the Yangtze River Patrol, which would be the United States and China in the 20s. I would think it would probably be useful for maybe the British in Sudan, British in India.
Okay.
British in South Africa.
British anywhere.
I want to check those out.
Well, Bill Zona's doing that. He's another talented fellow when it comes to painting and modeling and terrain making. Just a lot of talent in this room today, actually.
Well, especially now that I'm here.
Well, of course. Although, speaking of talent in doing the episode, should say that we're missing our radio voice, Mr. Radio Announcer Alan Sosopoulos.
Yes, we are.
He's had a little bit of a family issue that had to be taken care of, but he promised he was going to be here, and unfortunately things come up, but I know that everyone enjoys hearing his special announcer voice, and sadly we are without it today.
Yes, because apparently neither one of us has a good radio announcer voice.
Yeah, I won't take it personal I've been doing it for, a million years, but we'll just...
Doesn't mean you were doing it well.
No, that's true. In fact, for the beginning years, I probably was doing it very poorly, and I will admit that. But people like it, I guess. And then some Wings of Glory being done, too, which we both really enjoy. Kevin Clanton doing that. World War II, Wings of Glory. Because they get the World War I one as well, which is the one that I really appreciate.
Yeah, it's the only one I've ever played, actually. I assume they're pretty similar, but it's a very fun game.
They get six tables worth of gaming, and then in the afternoon, there's some repeats of Ghost Recon's tape coming back. We got Battle of Lundy's Lane, which we have done before and we loved. It's World War II.
War of 1812.
Thank you. I was trying to get my way to Civil War, which is also wrong.
The reason I didn't want to do that one, it's kind of a lame reason, but it uses Black Powder rule set, which we're very familiar with, and I wanted to try something different.
Yeah, I mean, we love Black Powder, don't get us wrong, but it's nice to do something different. That's why you come to here, I think.
You can
do that kind of stuff. So Gabriel Landowski, who's a friend of the show and been a guest, is going to come on again. Actually, I see him at the table playing Deerfield right now. And he's doing his Victorian science fiction, which I had suggested maybe that we could do, but that's not what we're actually going to be playing in.
It is not.
But he was a runner-up. We've got another one here, World War II-ish, by Maureen Reddington Wild. Rules of Senshado, which is a home set of rules, homebrew.
Yeah.
And do you want to read the description of that? It sounds really interesting and funny.
Well, I want to read it. Okay.
Girls. This is, John is telling me to read it, so I will read it.
Yeah, much like, never mind. Another thing that I don't really want to do that I'm going to do because John says.
Podcast. No.
Okay. Girls high school team combat sport with World War II tanks. Inspired by the Girls und Panzer anime, which actually anybody who's familiar with the World of Tanks game may be somewhat familiar with that, if you're not just in general. But anyway, tank skirmish combat where the big tanks don't always win the day. Mastery of the use of tank robatics, which I guess for a human being that would be acrobatics, but tank robatics and sneaky tanks can prevail. Panzer Vor.
That sounds awesome. I'm a big fan of the New Dominion Tank Police anime. In Dominion Tank Police anime from way back in the manga, it kind of makes me think of that because the tanks, they're small and agile, but they climb up buildings and they do all sorts of crazy stuff. And...
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one, but I know the World of Tanks, the online, which is an online multiplayer shooter game. They did a thing with Girls in Panzer anime. I think one of the servers, maybe the EU or the China server, I don't remember. They might actually have some of the tanks from Girls in Panzer. I don't think they were ever made available in North America. But anyway.
And then there's the one we're playing in.
Yes.
And you were pretty excited about it.
I am, because the one we're playing in is it's a medieval game, Battle of, I'm going to mispronounce this, that's okay.
Better you than me.
Tinchabre. And it's using Chris Parker's Day of Battle Medieval rules, which is a set of rules that I own. But oddly and embarrassingly, I don't have any actual medieval miniatures to use with it.
You don't need them.
So, you don't need them, but...
Print and play. Actually, he gives it to you in the book.
Okay, I know that, but you know, miniatures. So, anyway, we're going to give that a try. We've played his other Day of Battle games, Light Bobs.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Huzzah.
Right, yeah. Huzzah. And that was a lot of fun, and Medieval Day of Battle is apparently pretty similar, but I wanted to give it a try, so that's what we're going to play.
And then there's a night game. I think there's only the one, honestly. It goes from 7 to, what is it, 10 or 11 o'clock at night?
Yeah, Rich they only Clayton's do one doing. At night, and I think a lot of people tend not to stay, which is why there's only one.
Yeah. This is going to be using Mordheim, and that intrigues me. That but is, historical Mordheim.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why I was thinking if we could stay, maybe we should, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No, but this intrigues me because it's about the plot, the Pazzi conspiracy, the plot to kind of oust the Medici family.
Yeah.
And knowing Rich, it's going to be a pretty fantastic game.
Yeah, it's guaranteed.
He does such a good job for all of his stuff. And actually, everyone here does it. They really put their best foot forward.
Yes.
Why don't we talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that's going on here? So, like, when we first started to come to the Hobby Bunker for these things, we didn't really come to play, right? We came to shop.
Basically, yeah. It was always, you know, do we really want to take the... Because it's a little bit of a drive, which isn't really a problem, except it's through Boston.
Yeah, 45 minutes. Yeah, bad traffic.
Yeah. And it's always, you know, how much time do you really want to spend up there? Well, we'll go, we'll see some people that we haven't seen since Huzzah, chat a little bit, blow a little bit of money at the Hobby Bunker and head home. So this is actually going to be the second year that we've actually played a game here.
Yeah, unusual.
We played last year. Hail Caesar, we played last year.
Yes, Battle of Agrigentum.
Okay, yeah. I can't believe you remembered that, but okay.
Well, because I remember thinking at the time, I don't know how you pronounce this thing. And then even afterwards, I was like, I don't know how we pronounced it. And so I never remember which way I pronounced it and whether I've ever pronounced it correctly. So I probably have not.
Yeah, so,
but hopefully a listener will correct me.
But anyway, this is the second year we're actually going to play a game here. We kind of came to this consensus that if we're going to drive all the way up here anyway, we might as well actually make it worth our while and play a game. So yeah, that's what we're doing.
It's only $5 to get in, which isn't bad. You get...
Yeah, $5. You register for as many games as you want for $5.
Yeah, so it's one game per session, basically.
Yeah.
But there's three sessions if you do the night one. And it's a day of gaming, and you're supporting the hobby, you're supporting the local business. It's just all sorts of wonderful things that we care about.
Yep, and if you're any kind of gamer, you will spend money at the Hobby Bunker, so it's a win for everybody.
Absolutely, and you alluded to some of the products that you can get. We were looking at World War II stuff because of the Sam Mustafa interview, and he had said you can use Flames of War, so oddly enough, the Flames of War stuff here is discounted.
Yeah, I noticed that. I've got plenty of 15mm World War II to paint. But there's nothing wrong with having some more.
No, and then they're doing a 20% off sale here, too, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
Usually the sale never coincides with the game day.
No, but I've already zeroed in on two sets of rules that I'm going to buy, which obviously I need some more rules.
So
and
what
I
do
probably
you,
will pick up some figures.
What do you think you're going to pick up?
I'm going to pick up Blucher, probably.
Yeah.
And with a set of Age of Sail rules that I may grab. I don't know yet.
Okay.
And there was a set of Revolutionary War rules, which I might grab, but since I've got British Grenadier and haven't actually had a chance to play them yet, maybe not, I don't know.
The thing about you I've noticed is whenever you see a bunch of rule books, you go there and then you walk away with them. Like, what do you do with them? Do you hoard them somewhere, or do they, like, live
in
a closet?
They do. I mean, to me, for the most part, reading a rule book is just like reading a regular book, and I'm always kind of looking for the perfect set of rules, right? So I've got... Let me think. I think I've got maybe four different sets of World War II skirmish rules. Because you're always looking for the perfect rule set that gives you exactly what you want. Now, I know that that rule set doesn't exist. But that doesn't keep me from looking for it. So, yeah, I'm a rules hoarder. There's no doubt about that.
I keep waiting for you to just be like, okay, I get all these rules. And then pick portions of them that you like. And then just make your own.
I suppose we could do that, right?
Because you can publish. We know people, right? We know people who can do Leo. We know people with that art and everything and this crowdfunding and all. I keep waiting for you to say, do you know what? This is what I want to do. And you've never told me that, so I'm really surprised.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more that goes into... I would love to do that.
Playtesting and so forth.
Yeah, but there's a lot more that goes into designing and developing a game that I really don't have the experience or knowledge how to do it. So, but I would love to do that.
I mean, we know people, though. People who would be willing to help and could do it and put it out. And listeners, I'm sure, who would want to check it out and play it and give it a try. And
well, maybe we can do, maybe we can look into crowdsourcing some of that. I mean, yeah, why not? It's like, we can do that in our copious spare time.
Well, there is that. I do want to say, in the back of my mind for a long time, I've been trying to figure out a reason for us to try to do a Kickstarter, and I don't know why, and it would probably be terrible. So that's why we haven't done anything, but I know people have done very successful Kickstarters, and some of them have said, just if you want to do one, let me know, and we'll help you out and get it going. And I'm sure that's like a full-time job that none of us really want, but
no doubt.
I would love if we were like, okay, we're going to set up a, I don't know, recording studio somewhere, and we'll Kickstart it and come up with really cool rewards and things. And I don't know. I'm just...
You're babbling.
I am. I'm brainstorming is what it is.
Oh, all right.
Who knows what the future comes? I mean, look at the... Okay, so we're in no Dice Tower by any stretch of the imagination. But look at the Dice Tower, right? Tom Vassell, they did a Kickstarter, paid for him to be full-time for podcasting for a whole year.
Yep.
It paid for, I think, half-time for someone else to be part-time and help out. It paid for them to get a location to do stuff. They were, again, Dice Tower, but recently to do a whole thing, and very, very different. But if they can do it, someday maybe we too could.
Maybe so.
Who knows when or if, but maybe. I have my eye, actually, I just kind of did a quick peek, but I really want to see what they have here so that we can tackle a different project.
And what would that be?
So we, right now, Blood and Plunder.
Yes.
I think it's no surprise to anyone that's the next project, right?
Yep, that's in progress.
And we don't really have another large project planned after that I'm aware of?
I've got two that I'm working on that I haven't let you know about, I guess.
American Civil War.
Yeah, 15mm. I need to do a 15mm army for that.
Yeah, well, two armies.
Oh, right.
Confederates in Union. Yeah. What's your other one?
There's two others, actually, that aren't really in progress. I've got a good collection of 28mm Napoleonic Prussians. But the thing with doing a good Napoleonics game is you need to have a lot of models on the table for it to look good. And because of where we end up having the game, we're usually limited to a 6x4-foot table, which isn't really a problem, but at 28mm, especially using the black powder rules, it can be kind of tough to get enough stuff on the table to make it look really great. Anyway, long story short is I want to do 15mm Napoleonics. So I've got a few miniatures that I've started for that. And we'll see how far that goes. I may end up not doing as much with that as I plan on doing. Because Napoleonics used to be my primary focus in gaming, but I've kind of shifted away from that now, I would say. But anyway, we'll see. I've got enough figures to make up a French brigade, so we'll see.
What about doing Snappy Nappy?
Yeah, Snappy Nappy would be great, and I do want to do that, and we can do that with limited figures. I have enough Prussians right now.
Print and play, in fact.
Yeah, enough with the print and play. It's a great idea, but it's really not my thing. But you're right, we could. We could definitely give that a shot.
Just to see if there's enough interest amongst our community of gamers for actually doing, you know, Napoleonics and playing that. And if there is, I think a lot of us really do prefer playing with the minis, but it takes so much time to do, and with all these different things we want to tackle and try.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's hard. And then as long as we keep on trying to do convention games and that kind of stuff, and I mean, we don't really know what the themes are for anything for part of 2018 and or for 2019 either, right?
Definitely not for 2019.
Because like Huzzah hasn't said anything for 2018, right?
Not that I've seen.
We know it's Pirates for TotalCon, and those are really the ones that we go to.
Yeah.
But no one, I don't think anyone else has said for 2018, and nobody's said anything for 2019.
No.
And, I mean, we don't have to fit with the theme. We did the OGC episode a while ago with Mike Payne, and he talked about not doing anything for the theme for OGC. He runs his thing, so one doesn't have to, but it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really concentrate on the theme games unless it happens to be something that I have stuff for. I mean... It was just a happy coincidence with TotalCon that they decided to do Pirates at about the same time I started getting into Blood and Plunder. So it's like, you know, like I say, a happy coincidence, so why not do that?
Yeah, because we were going to do...
We were just going to do another bold action or Black Powder game, yeah. So, which is fine, too, but...
I would personally love to expand bolt action.
Yeah, I need to paint some more figures for it, because what I have now is stuff that I painted specifically for the last scenario we ran at Total Con. But yeah, Bolt Action is a very enjoyable game, so we'll definitely do more with that.
Do you mean Santa isn't coming, but Hitler is?
Yes.
I love that name. But I can't help but think every time we release a podcast episode with that somewhere in there, that we end up on a watch list.
Yeah, probably, especially now.
I'm always like, oh. But I mean, I get an army. I didn't paint it, but I bought a painted army, and I want to expand it a little bit. So
yeah.
I'd like to do that, give a little bit more options. And we have other people who play, but they're still building their stuff.
They are, yeah.
And it's basically, you get Germans. You get some Americans, too, but you get Germans.
I actually have more Americans than I have Germans, which is a little bit odd.
That's weird. Okay. Carrie has Germans, right?
I believe so.
John is working on his Russians. And he's kind of suffers from the me disease of he's always working on it.
Yeah.
And unlike me, he actually ends up painting stuff eventually.
Eventually, yeah.
Just it takes a while. So, like, we get that, and then Rick wants to do Japanese.
Yeah, I think he's actually bought the whole Japanese starter set. I might be wrong about that.
Okay, so, I mean, that's something that he's doing. But it'd be nice to kind of expand so that we could do more with it, especially since we got terrain, we got stuff for the table and everything.
Yeah, we invested a lot in it to get the game on the table at Total Con. So, yeah, we're definitely going to be doing more with that.
Just, I think, and I don't know what they have, to be honest, but I'd want to look and see what they got to try to focus more on that. As I've said many times, I'm being more selective in my purchasing. Yeah. I mean, there's only so much space, and I'm actually offloading a ton of my 172nd scale ancient Romans.
Yeah, which I'll get rid of mine, too, since you're getting rid of yours. I won't need mine. I'll give them to you, and we can sell them as a block. That might actually work better.
Yeah, I mean, because I thought with them that maybe I would just top them all off, because they're basically one piece for most of them, and just glue them to a base, and we could play. Then I realized, like, that probably wasn't going to happen, because you wouldn't want to play with that consistently if it wasn't painted. And if yours were painted and mine weren't, then I wouldn't hear the end of it, and then we eventually would stop playing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what would have happened.
And then with Aurelion, again, I feel, especially for Aurelion, because of how it is, I think it's a very old school kind of game, that we're better off not having painted figs and just using the unit tiles for it.
Yeah, well, the difference with Aurelion is it's specifically designed for that.
Yeah.
So.
But, like, I think that'll fill my ancients' desire.
Yeah, mine too, probably, because as much as I enjoyed playing Hail Caesar,
and I do like it.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a good set of rules. I'm just not that into ancients. I mean, I do enjoy medieval stuff. I eventually want to have some medieval stuff painted up. But to do a whole, like, ancient, I don't know, Hittite, Roman, whatever army, it just doesn't set me on fire, so I know I'll never do it.
I mean, you're a Napoleonic guy, and then you do other stuff. You'll do World War II, you'll do almost anything, but, like, your heart's not in ancients.
No, exactly. So I don't want to invest a lot of money in it, and I don't want to invest a lot of time painting, because I hate painting.
And I think I'm on a Sam Mustafa kit lately, is really what it is. So I think I want to try his other stuff.
You're just trying to say Sam Mustafa as much as you can, so Mustafa. You remember, right?
Yeah. It's Mustafa.
Isn't that what I said?
You said moo, like the
cow.
Oh,
Mustafa, okay.
It's Mustafa.
Anyway, I think you're just trying to get the name in as much as you can so you don't forget the next time you talk to him.
I might forget it, but he has so many games, and I think we could spend a lot of time on them. And whereas you have a lot of interest in it, and there's other people in our gaming group who have an interest in it, I think it's something that it makes sense, and I have an interest, so
yeah.
Why not try? I want to try Free Jumper, actually. It's the next one I'd like to try after Rommel.
Yeah, I actually... right after we finished the interview with Sam, I actually put my order in.
Don't lie. During the interview.
All right. It was a little unprofessional, yeah. So while we were doing the interview with Sam, I put my order in for Rommel because I wanted to give that a try. But at the same time, Free Jumper is it's a PDF set of rules, so it's very inexpensive. So I got that as well. So we'll be able to give that a shot here before long, because that's another one that's print and play.
Why don't we talk about something that's not print and play? Dungeons & Dragons, which is something I didn't think we'd ever talk about on the show, to be honest.
I didn't either, to be honest. So, theoretically...
Not because I dislike it. It's just... We're historical in New England gaming, but it's New England gaming because we're doing it.
New England gaming because it's a game and we're in New England, and theoretically we're going to be doing it. Yeah.
Well, we did some. We did character creation.
We got together at a... How geek is this? We got together at a... at a local brewery, actually, a brew pub.
Yeah, Kessel Island Brewing.
Yeah, in Norwood.
They do good beer there.
Amazing beer, actually.
I should recommend them. So
we got there together. It was you, me, Alex, and my daughter, Rachel, actually, who's been very interested in getting involved in the live D&D game. So, yeah, we showed up there one night and did character creation. Did not get beaten up, which was cool.
Yeah. I mean, I really thought, like, there's going to be the four of us there with D&D books and rolling dice and stuff, and everyone else is going to be drinking and being like, what are those lizards doing here?
Yeah, and it definitely got some looks, especially when we started doing the character background stories, and especially when Rachel was doing hers, because she was very excited about it, and when she gets excited, she tends to speak rather loudly, so everybody knows all about her female rogue character.
Oh, and she's playing, it's kind of a demonic race, too, so...
Tieflings, yeah, not a favorite of mine, but Alex said he would allow it, so why not?
And then she's like... She's talking about, like, the devil doing this, and people like, the devil, and they're looking over, and I thought, oh, no.
Yeah, well, at least we weren't doing character gen in a church or something like that.
But. No, but why don't we talk about our characters a little bit? So, do you want to start off with yours?
Lord.
Your sailor barbarian, right?
There, now you know everything that you need to know about him. He's he is a traditional chaotic neutral barbarian. With a pirate background. And he greatly dislikes John's character, although they've been forced by circumstances to work together.
So the general premise Alex came up with for us to have all our characters working together is that we're in whatever kingdom it is. And we're basically the kingdom's police force. So we get sent out on these adventures. And the reason for this part is because that stereotypical, and you all meet in a tavern, is just so passé. But also, it's not a campaign. We're going to be doing vignettes, in essence.
Right, yeah. There's no possible way we'll be able to meet often enough to do an actual campaign. So Alex is going to do, like, one-off adventures where, you know, the adventure will last one, maybe two sessions.
I'm excited for it. I think, actually, there's going to be a big strength in having a predetermined end for each module, I guess you can call it, or each adventure,
yeah.
So that we don't know when it's going to end. Like, we know this is what we have, so it's going to give us a sense of urgency to really try to get stuff done. And he can build that in-game so that our characters know, like, oh, you. Let's pretend there's, like, a kidnapping. Like, you need to find by whatever the deadline is, or the kidnappers will kill whatever. So, like, we get to go find the noble relative or whatever and go and do such and such. And, I mean, cop drama is really popular right now in general, like on TV and stuff, so there's a lot of ideas.
Yeah, there's a lot of ideas you can steal from, and really, if you look at it that way, and we're doing vignetted episodes like that, it's like basically doing a cop drama show in D&D. So, I'm looking forward to it. It should be kind of fun.
I think, depending on where we actually play, we're hoping that we might be able to get some actual play footage, whether it's just audio for the podcast or a video that'll go on YouTube and the Roku channel and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, so that would be a lot of fun if we can do that. It's... Here again, we're up against our usual problem, and we don't really have a great place. I shouldn't say that. We do have some great places to play, but we just don't have great ones that everybody can agree on. And the ones that we do have, probably not going to let us be shooting video. But I don't think audio should be a problem.
No, I actually, where I think we'll end up, which is a game store near Alex and myself, I think we'll be able to do audio no problem there.
Yeah.
And I think the person will have no trouble with it. If you're interested in my character, as people probably are, because the one thing game stores and gamers love to hear more than anything else in the world about someone's role-playing game character.
Oh, yeah.
Is I am playing a lawful good paladin who is a wood elf from a noble background. And his motivation is basically that he comes from a long line of distinguished wood elves who honor and revere a certain deity. And he reveres a different one and thinks that his family is wrong, but he needs to bring them around to his way of thinking to change worshiper to this other deity. And in order to do that, he thinks he can join the law force and convince them through his glorious deeds that he is, in fact, the true believer because his deity allowed him to be so successful at all of his police work, in essence, and then convince them. I didn't say it was a good backstory. I just said it was a backstory.
No, it's not a bad backstory.
So it's interesting that way, and I think we could get some hijinks out of it, which is really what I was looking for.
Yeah.
You know, because there's some confusion in there and some things that just don't make some sense, some contrarian kind of aspects to him, and I think with all of our characters.
Yes.
So it'd be kind of nice to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it'll, it should be fun.
In all of that.
In the traditional role-playing sense, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, and some people who play, and maybe some of you who listen are not familiar with this fantastic webcomic called Oots, Order of the Stick, but if you are, you know what I mean, and if you're not, it's this long-running webcomic series where the creator who actually created content, I think worked on D&D, and then he came up with this whole world that they turned down and said they weren't going to use. He turned it into a webcomic.
Yeah.
And so he's intimately familiar with how D&D works, and he does a very tongue-in-cheek kind of approach with the characters are going off on these adventures and trying to solve this thing and prevent world doom and annihilation and everything. But it's very tongue-in-cheek and humorous. So that's what I try to hope to bring into it, that we kind of get this, like, ha-ha thing to it. So we'll see if it actually works out. But it's something I am looking forward to for our D&D adventures.
Yeah.
And hopefully bring to listeners. I'm not quite sure how we'll bring it, but we'll work on it.
Yeah, we'll have to figure something out. I mean, we're not going to be able to do something with every episode, but we'll get some up.
Yeah, even, I mean, if it's some live play or portions of it, a few minutes of audio or something, we can get that going on.
Yeah.
I think at this point we should move on to Mailbag.
All right.
It's one of my favorite segments of the show. How about you?
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I can tell. So we have this thing that we do, in case you haven't figured out, where whenever we play a game, especially when it's for the show, I'll turn to Adrian and I'll say, pretend you're enjoying the game. And he does his face. And then I'll take a picture and put it on social media so you can all can see how much he's having fun. You make that face whenever I'm like, you always make that face. It's funny.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I'm just not a happy, jolly guy.
You literally, I was like, so, do you, and you made the face. Like, I didn't have to, you did it. It's great. So I wish people could see it, because, well, you could come through a taping of the show when we're at a convention.
Yeah.
So on Facebook, listener Sean said of episode 186, which is the Model Box subscription review episode, and you can get that by going to the show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR191. So we have everything we've talked about, links and all that kind of stuff, including the link to that episode. But listener Sean said, quote, I come up with plenty of ideas of what to buy on my own. Thanks. Unquote. So Sean, I'm with you. I get a lot of ideas myself, and I don't necessarily need something like Model Box to help me think of a new project. But not everyone is in that boat. I mean, sometimes you're looking for something you don't know what to do, or you're new to the hobby, and I think those are ways in which Model Box can be a strength for someone. It's kind of controversial, though. What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah, about Model Box. Or any of those. Loot Crate, Geek Crate, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, the gaming hobby is not the only hobby doing that. I mean, there's a lot of those, like, mystery boxes of the month things out there. I think it's fun. I mean, why not? It wouldn't be for me. I can say that. Because you're spending however much it is. I'm not sure how much it is.
I don't remember. I think like 15 a month.
Okay, so $15 a month to get a box of stuff.
30 maybe.
That you may have absolutely no interest whatsoever in. On the other hand, it might be a bunch of great stuff.
So
it's kind of fun. It's kind of like a Christmas present. It's like, did my grandmother give me another pair of hand-knitted socks this year? Or is it an Xbox? I don't know. And so... Yeah, no, I understand the appeal. I think it's a great idea. It's not for me, but...
We talked about it in the episode, or Mike Payne was actually on that episode, I think, with me. But the one they sent was like Barbarians or something like that.
Yep.
And I thought, okay, not necessarily my interest, really. And the one before was War, so there was like Flames of War stuff, there was stuff for... Like all this kind of stuff that I was like, oh, that would have been great.
Yeah.
And that, I think, encapsulates it. So you can get really amazing stuff, but... Maybe it's not amazing for you. And I think when it comes down to the value, and I haven't apportioned out the pricing of it and stuff, but I actually think, let's say it's, and the pricing actually depends on how frequently you subscribe. So if you do like a, let's say it's a monthly subscription, it's going to cost more than if you do 6 month subscription a year or whatever.
Right.
But even if you did it month by month, I think you end up getting like, say, $10 to $15 more worth of stuff than what you're paying. And I don't know how they work that out, but I think that's what it is. So I think you are underpaying for what you're getting.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not a bad deal. It's the kind of thing for me where it's like, it would be nice if you could maybe possibly select a theme for your boxes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If they were like, okay, we have these three themes and you pick.
Yeah.
Or two themes. And
like, I like historical, or I want sci-fi, or I want fantasy. Because, like, if you're primarily, say, a historical gamer, and then 2 months in a row, you get two boxes of, I don't know, anime, fantasy stuff. Yeah, just not worth it to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. It really depends on the person. But I think the idea is pretty good, and it seems popular.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a good idea. And like I say, it's obviously going to appeal to a lot of people, which is great, but eh.
Don't forget, everyone, that you too can leave feedback for the show. You can go to Facebook, we're on Twitter, you can email us, all that kind of stuff. More detailed information at the end of the episode, but you can go to our show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR191. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR191. And that'll have all that kind of information for you. So why don't we move on to announcements? So we have a brand new Facebook group that you can join, and people just kind of hang it out. Think of it like an internet forum without all the bull that happens there in the drama. People are very nice to one another, and it works out. We got a poll going on for the favorite podcast guest so far. So people have been voting for who they like and just other discussions about things. I actually just recently posted about the news of Spartan Games closing, which actually makes me sad. That's something I actually want to look for here.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Dystopian Wars, I'm hoping it's going
to
be discounted.
I am not surprised.
So from what I understand, and I don't think I'm talking out of school, and I think anyone who's aware of Spartan Games and what they're doing, I think you probably are coming to the same conclusion that I have, and from what I've, maybe not from what I've heard, though. So you might be familiar with them. They have a variety of games. They had Uncharted Seas, which they discontinued. It was their fantasy naval game. Dystopian Wars, which was their, what do we call it, steampunk-ish?
Yeah, steampunk-ish, I guess.
So. Historical-ish, steampunk-ish. Yeah. Naval game, and then they added a land game to it. And then there's one other one that I can't think of. Firezone Armada, is that it? Which was a sci-fi, almost like Battlefleet Gothic type of one. But then they added a video game property to turn it into a game. And I'm referring to Halo. And from what I've heard, which may or may not be true, so please take it with a grain of salt. And if I'm wrong, please correct me. And if I find out, I will correct myself. But I think because they expanded into Halo, that's what did them in part. So they mentioned other issues, like there were health issues with some of the directors and other things, but I think because of the money that may have been owed in order to keep Halo going and all that kind of stuff, I think that was a contributing factor for why they had to shut down.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's hard to run in these kind of businesses when you have crowdsourcing.
Yeah, it's very hard. I mean, I've never run one, but I mean, I imagine it's got to be sort of like the restaurant biz where it's a low margin kind of thing. I don't know.
I think so. Like, we were kind of joking before, maybe half-hearted joking, but you and I could create a game, right? And we could go and crowdsource it. We could get it funded and put it out. And then, like, real game companies, like Spartan Games, well, formerly Spartan Games, their market share dwindles, so they're not going to be able to do. And, I mean, that's how free market works, right, people? But at the same time, I think that they had some really good games there. Like, I like Dystopian Wars. I like the models and all that kind of stuff. You know, the games are kind of dealing with that sort of stuff. Tor Gaming, I think, recently announced that they're going down, too. They've done, is it Relic? Relic Game is the name of the game. Know. Relics might be the name of the game. Might be wrong, but so this kind of stuff is impacting everyone. It's harder with brick and mortar stores and all that sort of stuff. So, but you can get that kind of discussion on our Facebook group. And then want to let you all know that we have an announcement about our Roku channel. So Nerd Broadcasting Network is how we're going to be putting it out. We're a member of their flagship wargaming show, actually. And as far as we know, things are being delayed, unfortunately. So funding is coming in, and there's some grants and things of that sort. But it's just taking a little bit longer. So they're hoping that it'll be done for, what do we have? Winter 2017. I can't guarantee that, though, but we're hoping it'll be coming soon. And when it does, we will announce that or any other updates that we might happen to have. And then I also want to take a moment to thank our Patreon backers, or some of them anyway. They are people who are members of the Wargaming Recon Army. So I want to thank Patrick and Kyle from Vermont. I want to say that you too can become a member of the Wargaming Recon Army by going to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. Costs as little as a dollar a month. You get episodes before non-members. You can get exclusive content. We have other rewards with different reward levels. You can get things like t-shirts and dice and all sorts of other cool stuff and be thanked on the show, like we were able to thank Patrick and Kyle from Vermont. So thank you, everyone who supports the show. I also want to remind you about those show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR191. And just want to say that the next episode, episode 192, comes out September 18th, 2017. That's the Sam Mustafa episode. How many more times do you think I can say Sam Mustafa without it sounding ridiculous that I'm saying Sam Mustafa?
I think that'll do.
Not a few more times saying Mustafa in there. So that's the episode from here at the Hobby Booker Game Day 2017. So, Adrian, do you have anything else to add before we close shop?
I do not.
Well, I'm not going to get to barge in.
So that is Mike Payne barging in at the end. I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of the show. Know that no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, or how much time you are spending at your local game days, whether they are at a store like the Hobby Bunker or somewhere else or in your own home, that you know you have to, you gotta, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.